Welcome to the REI Diamond Interview, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom with Dan Breslin.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show, monthly market update for May 2016. I'm here with expert economist and wealth advisor Paul Sloat, founder of Green Drake Advisors. Each month, Paul joins us on the show here and enlightens us to the economic forces at work in the national and global economy and what those forces are expected to do to the local real estate investment markets in the short term and the long term. Once again, welcome to the show, Paul.
Well, thank you, Dan. I'm happy to be back.
Absolutely. So I believe you have prepared, as usual, some topics and some things we should be aware of. So I'll let you take it away, Paul.
All right. So I thought that this month, Dan, maybe we could cover a little bit on housing starts and where we are on new construction trends for the U.S. And I know we had spoken about this. You had also asked a little bit about the emerging markets and maybe how they might impact real estate investors. We'll talk a little bit about the emerging markets a little bit later and sort of the things you need to watch out for and how it could be both a positive and a negative. So first, let's talk a little bit about housing starts. As you know, there's good data going back a long time up until World War II. And if we were to look at new housing starts, historically, they've run somewhere between, and I'm talking single-family housing starts here, they've run somewhere between 800,000 and about 1.5 million. And that's sort of the norm, and that's about 1.2 million housing starts on average through a cycle. And we have another 300,000 or so multifamily starts through a housing cycle, which gives us about a 1.5 million on average housing starts total units. So what's happened in the last cycle was that in the early 2000s, the banks became loose with credit and single family home starts went all the way up to 1.7 million units in 2005, which is well above what was needed in terms of housing units. Now, of course, at the same time, we were still building a few hundred thousand multifamily units. So we were actually building over 2 million units at that time. But then what happened in order to correct this excess, starts went all the way down. So individual housing starts went down to 430,000. And if we were to take the 430,000 and average it with 1.715 million, we'd come up with about 2.2 million or about 1.1 million on average for the housing starts. So what the market did over time was averaged out how many starts we needed to correct for the excesses that were seen in the early 2000s. Now, since then, we've seen housing starts come back to a little over 700,000 for 2015, which is still well shy of where we need to be overall in terms of housing starts. As we look at it, household formation over the long term for the U.S. has averaged a little over a million units, somewhere around 1.1 to 1.2 million. If we go back to the early 80s, so for the last 35 years, that's been around the right number. The other thing we should know is there's about 300,000 units to 400,000 units a year of housing that really becomes obsolete. So what happens is we need, on average in the U.S. every year, 1.5 to 1.6 million units of housing in total. That's a reflection of both what we need for new households that are being formed and also to replace housing stock that's either burnt down or obsolete. So when we look at what's gone on now, we've seen housing starts accelerate upward. They were 1.1 million overall, including multifamily. The interesting thing about multifamily units right now is that we're building the most multifamily units since the late 1980s. And by the way, the late 1980s was when we had the last surge into the workforce of the baby boomers, and what we're having now is the surge into the workforce of the echo baby boomers, what are known as the millennials. Now, what we're starting to see with the millennials is they are starting to buy houses. We now have three quarters in a row in which the percentage of millennials that own their own house has increased. In other words, millennials are settling down and having families just like previous generations, and they're moving out of the apartments and into their own home. We expect this trend to continue and to accelerate as the decade progresses, and this should have a significant impact on both apartment rentals or house rentals and single-family rentals. We think that over time, the rental market is going to come under pressure, but what's bad for one market is going to be good for another. And in particular, this will be good for owned housing units, because your millennials are going to want to own a house in a reasonable school district where they can bring up their kids. So we expect that housing starts, which continue to recover this year, will continue to recover, may have a slight blip in the next recession, but nothing serious, and may do something like they did in the 2000-2001 recession. What happened at that time is housing starts peaked in 1999 at about 1.3 million units, but only dropped to 1.23 million units in 2000 before coming back to 1.27 million units in 2001. And then in 2002, housing starts took off, reaching 1.358 million. So we might see something here where housing starts for single family stay somewhere in the 750,000 range or so if we have a real economic slowdown, and then accelerate as the decade progresses to head up towards that 1.2 million, which is where they need to be. So as we look out for single family homes, we expect it to be a good market for single family homes. And in fact, what we are hearing from the brokers here in the Philadelphia region, single family homes are hot. They are seeing five or six bidders per home. And so that is a big change from where we were in 2010 and 2011, where you couldn't give the houses away. So as we say, all things go around in great circles and everything comes around. So we expect both housing to stay strong, and we, for demographic reasons and because we're not building enough units, and we expect the number of housing starts to accelerate, which should be good for any of our listeners who want to be in the business of building housing units. As we look at the housing market, you should think in those terms. Now, let's take a look at the emerging markets. I know that Dan had some questions on, well, how do they impact real estate here in the U.S.? Well, there are some direct impacts, and then there are some indirect impacts. And so why don't we talk about the direct ones, which are pretty clear. I think the direct one is really seeing emerging market money come into the U.S. to buy housing units and real estate. This is especially true for the major urban centers such as New York and LA, and also for areas like Miami, which have a big feed in from South America. So what happens is it's called flight capital. It flees the local economy and it comes into the U.S. in the form of buying a piece of real estate. Now, what we have seen recently, for example, in places like New York City, the high-end real estate market there has come under some pressure. And we are not surprised. One is that units got too expensive, and two, they started building high-end units to meet this demand. So that's one direct way that emerging markets can impact the U.S. The other way in which emerging markets can impact the U.S. is what I would call indirectly. Now, when we build or finance any type of real estate, we pay interest on our loans. Well, the rate at which we pay interest can be massively impacted by the emerging markets, and by that I mean over the last year when we had problems in the emerging markets, it forced up financing rates that were below the highest investment grade. And as a result, anybody who needed to borrow money to pay and finance their real estate, it cost them more money. So that, while not a direct impact on the U.S., is an indirect impact that can have a significant say in whether a piece of real estate is economic or not. So, for example, we have seen low-quality credit spreads jump by almost 5%. And that's the kind of jump that can make a piece of real estate, let's say we go from 4 or 5% up to 8 to 10% to finance it, uneconomic. So, as we look at things, we have to understand that real impact of these emerging markets is going to be through the indirect channel, which means that interest rates go higher or that credit standards tighten because banks are afraid that there's going to be negative fallout from something happening overseas, so they tighten their standards here in the U.S. to protect themselves. Of course, by tightening here in the U.S., they create a self-fulfilling prophecy in that they have a negative impact on economic growth, and then their borrowers have more trouble because economic growth slows. And that may be what we have seen in the last year, and we're starting to see credit standards tighten, especially on commercial real estate. So, what are the signs that investors can look at overseas to understand whether there's going to be a problem from overseas or whether things are going to get better and it might provide a tailwind? Well, there's a couple of different things, Dan, that we look at that we think your listeners can pay attention to. So, these things come down to what is the credit standing of some of these emerging markets, such as Brazil. The other big thing people should look at is what are the debt to GDP ratios of some of these key emerging markets. If you look at the debt to GDP ratios and whether or not they're running a trade surplus, it tells you what is the probability they will pay back their debt. And when the market gets worried about them paying back their debt, it causes all kinds of problems, including usually a decrease in the currency, which means that they have less money to buy assets outside their country. So when we look at these emerging markets, it's a lot of understanding individual countries. Unfortunately, there is no blanket statement anymore about these emerging markets. They are really heterogeneous. In other words, they don't look like each other anymore. And what that means is basically you can't compare Kenya to Indonesia because the economics that impact those two countries are completely different. So, I know that that doesn't sound like it's a good guide, but it really is. What you need to do is watch just a couple of simple things, their debt to GDP, and watch their currencies. And if the currency starts tanking, it usually means they're going to have a problem because the financial markets know way before it shows up on the front page of the newspaper. That's just a little bit on the emerging markets and how they can have an impact on real estate domestically in the U.S., even if There is no money coming into the U.S. from that particular country. Dan had also asked a little bit about where in the country we're seeing a lot of building of various units. And so where we're seeing a lot of building of units is in the South and the West, which continue to dominate the housing starts data. If we were to look at housing starts data, the South and the West have in 2015 accounted for 800,000 of the total 1.1 million housing units that went up, both individual houses and multifamily. Well, one thing I can tell you is that that directly relates to the ease of permitting in those areas. If you try to get a permit and all the necessary environmental and sewer, et cetera, here in the Northeast, it is what I would call a long-term proposition to get yourself approved. However, in the South and in the West, it is much easier to get the approvals and it takes much less time. Thus, if you look at where the housing units are being built, that's where they're being built. And the other thing is there's more land on which to build. In my area of at least the Philadelphia region, there is very little land available for ground-up building unless you're tearing something down and putting up a multifamily-type piece of property. And if you're trying to put up single-family houses, there's really not much land available. And if you look at what's being built on the available land, they're putting up bigger houses on smaller pieces of property. So what I would say for the viewers is that the real building is occurring in the South and the West. And if they really wanted to get into the building area, that's where they should be located. In addition, I would say the following, the permitting is easier, so your ability to get your units up is going to be a lot quicker. So as I look at the U.S., what I would sum up for what we're talking about this month is that housing starts are strong and they're only going to get better over the next few years. So we should be thinking about investing in housing, that the apartment business or what's known now as the multifamily business is going to have probably some problems ahead as a lot of units are being built and the millennials, which have been the big demand driver for those units, are starting to buy houses. Oh, there's going to be less people looking for those units. And then the other thing we learned is that the emerging markets can have an impact, even if it's not direct, because they can impact the level of interest rates that finance the real estate that everybody is either investing in or building. So between those things, we should keep our eye on the housing market and how it can move ahead. And that's it for this week, Dan.
All right. Sounds good, Paul. I got a couple pages of notes here myself. As you were talking, I thought of maybe something we can do a little research on for next month's report, if you don't mind. And that would be the question of where are people migrating to in the United States and where are people migrating away from in the United States? Because I think that would help us to understand, too, some of the demand has got to be driving the 800,000 or so unit starts in the South and the West. I mean, obviously, there's got to be people moving there and houses starting in those areas to support that building, not just, you know, the simple fact that it can be done. There's got to be people who are actually occupying those houses in the end. Do you think we could put that on the agenda for the next call?
I think we can easily put that on the agenda. I'll make sure we have all that data for you, Dan.
Sounds good. And the other thing, Paul, I wanted to mention, because you sent me this great and interesting and in-depth economic report / letter that you put together. And there's so much great information in there. It's, you know, it's really solid. Is that something you'd be willing to share with people if they wanted to kind of get their hands on that too? Or did you just send that specifically to me since I'm kind of on the inside track there, Paul?
Well, we do make available a trial subscription to our monthly newsletter on our website. So anybody who wants can go to our website, www.greendrakeadvisors.com. That's ADVISORS.com. And get a copy for themselves. And we're happy to send them a few as sort of a sample to see if they're really interested, Dan.
Okay. And if there's anybody else listening who wants to get in contact with you, do you want to just kind of tell the listeners exactly what Green Drake Advisors is all about and how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, Green Drake Advisors, we are a wealth management company, and we provide advice to people about their businesses as well as about how they should manage their wealth to help them become and stay wealthy and ultimately retire well. So that's what we do. The best way to get in touch with us is basically to call us at 610-687-7766 and leave a message for me and we will get back to you directly.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Paul, once again for coming on the show. It's been another great episode here.
And thank you, Dan, for having me. I'm looking forward to next month.
All right. Thank you for listening to the REI Diamond Show. As always, you can check out past episodes at reidiamonds.com. You can also sign up for the new episode notification email, which is typically sent out on Saturday at that site. That's reidiamonds.com. Thanks again for listening. Dan Breslin here, and I'll catch you next time. Remember, here at the REI Diamond Show, we are dedicated to bringing you the experts, ideas, and strategies for increasing and protecting your net worth.
Thanks for listening to the REI Diamond Interview. To receive the REI Diamonds newsletter and interview monthly, sign up now at www.reidiamonds.com.